Very pleasant good evening to all of you tonight. Hope you've had a good day, whatever you have endeavored to do, whether it was work or school or activities with the children and various things with your family. We've come to the close of the day, and what better way can we end it than as we've done already tonight, singing these songs together and praying together and praising together and studying the Bible together. And I'm glad to be a part of that, and I thank you for your interest, and I thank you for your attendance tonight. And I hope we can talk about some things that will be encouraging to all of us. You've got to love Auburn, Alabama in August. My car a while ago said 73 degrees, nice, quiet little breeze, and I know it's this way all of the time in August in Auburn, Alabama. So, I just really enjoy being here in the fall. What a great week. What a great day we had yesterday. Look forward to the remainder of our time together this week. I'm going to take some of you back so far that you can't go back there. There's going to be a few of you, though, that can, and you will recognize this rock group. It was Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young, who in 1970 had a hit song in which they urged parents with these lyrics, teach your children well. That's good advice. But I'll suggest something to you, that Crosby, Stills, Nash, and Young were not the first ones to ever suggest that. We saw last evening that Moses, all the way back in Deuteronomy chapter 6, challenged young parents with the responsibility of teaching your children diligently. That's structured teaching. And teach them also, talk to them when they sit in the house, when they walk by the way, when they lie down, and when they rise up. That is non-structured teaching. That is instructing them in the everyday processes, opportunities of life. Teach your children well, said Moses. Solomon said in Proverbs 22 and verse 6, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. A truism. But the message is, teach your children well. In Ephesians 6 and verse 4, Paul says, fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. What's he saying? Teach your children well. But as parents, what are we to teach them? And how do we do it well? And just what are the things that they need to know? I don't know of any parent who hasn't struggled with these questions. I don't know any parent who hasn't struggled with this subject that we're talking about tonight. And so I'll suggest something to you this evening as we begin our time together, and that is simply this, that in the history of our country, it has never been tougher. It has never been more difficult to raise up a godly family than it is right now. The world today is a moral minefield, a moral sewer, fraught with dangers to the soul of our children. When birth control, for example, is distributed in government schools without your permission, when music celebrates murder and gang violence and rape, when guns are the number one problem now facing school administrations, when technology allows pornography or sexual predators to come into your home through the internet, you can understand that somebody's values in this society are prevailing, and they're not yours or mine, or most importantly, God's. This is from Christian Counseling Magazine. 50% of all first marriages in this country end in divorce. We already know that. Did you know the United States has the highest rate in the industrialized world? 70% of all second marriages end in divorce. And 1 million children every year have parents who are separated or divorced. There are 800,000 adolescent pregnancies in the United States every year. 30% of all teenage girls in America will get pregnant, and 2/3 of those will not complete high school. 1 out of every 6 pregnancies now is to a teen. Nearly 750,000 of those will be aborted. 80% of this group will go on welfare, and the annual cost to you, the taxpayer, is over $7 billion. 1 in 3 children now live in a single-parent home. That rate hasn't doubled since 1960. It has tripled. Nearly 50% of all American births today are out of wedlock. If current trends continue, the total number of fatherless homes created by unwed childbearing will surpass the number created by divorce. Over 60 million children have experienced some form of sexual abuse before they graduate high school. The fastest growing segment of our criminal population is our nation's young people. In the last 2 decades, the arrest rate for juveniles committing murder has increased 93%. About 3 million thefts and violent crimes occur every year on a school campus. 20% of American high school students carry a firearm, knife, razor, or club, or some other weapon with them on a regular basis. That's our world. That's our society. That's our culture. So what I'm saying to you tonight is that if you are a parent, you are in for the fight of your life. And that's exactly what it is. It's a fight. It is a fight over who and what is going to influence your kids. And so the question is, are you willing as a parent, are you willing to go to war, to go to battle for your kids? Are you willing to fight for the right to influence them? Are you willing to do whatever it takes to teach and to train them, to watch over them and warn them, and in the process, impart to them the values of God? Are you willing to do that? I think of the words of Nehemiah in Nehemiah chapter 4 and verse 14, when he sought to motivate those families. And he said, "Do not be afraid. Remember the Lord your God, who is great and awesome." And he says, "Fight for your brothers. Fight for your sons, fight for your daughters, fight for your wives, fight for your homes." What are you saying, Nehemiah? I'm saying some things are worth fighting for, and our families are one of those things. My Bible's open to the 7th chapter of Matthew. Would you turn your Bible there? Matthew chapter 7 and beginning in verse 7. Matthew 7. And beginning in verse 7. "Ask, and it will be given to you. Seek, and you will find. Knock, and it will be opened to you. For everyone who asks receives, and he who seeks finds, and to him who knocks, it will be opened. Or what man is there among you who, when his son asks for a loaf, will give him a stone? Or if he asks for a fish, he will not give him a snake, will he? If you then being evil," that isn't compared to the goodness of God, "if you then being evil know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your Father who is in heaven give what is good to those who ask of him?" Jesus talks about here parents who give gifts to their children. And we do. We do that all the time. We do that on special days. Sometimes we do that for no reason at all. Because we as parents enjoy giving as much as we can, providing for our children. But I wonder about some of the gifts that we give our kids. I wonder if the gifts that we give our kids will be the kind of things that will be remembered. Parents, our kids need more than baseball gloves and baby dolls. Our kids need more than toys and trains and the latest technological trinket on the market. Those things have their place. But when all is said and done, those are not the kinds of things that are going to last. So I want to share with you tonight 10 gifts that every child deserves to have, or 10 things every child needs to know. So if you've got a piece of paper somewhere, and you can number 1 through 10, I suggest you do so. Because when we get down to number 6 or 7, you're going to think, now what was number 3? So, number 1 through 10. Now, if you think we're going to be here all night, you're wrong. This lesson won't take nearly as long as some of you stay after services. So, be that as it may, we're going to move pretty quickly. 10 things every child deserves to have or to know. Now, keep in mind, you can't buy any of these at Toys R Us. You can't take any of these gifts and put them in a box and wrap them in a bow. You can't charge any of these things on a Visa card. But I'll guarantee you something. I will guarantee you that these gifts will outlast the other gifts we tend to give them. So here they are. 10 gifts that every child deserves to have or to know. Number 1. They deserve to know that they are a special creation of God. That they are a special creation of God. Everything that I hope to teach my children rests upon this basic truth. That God is, and that God created the world, and that God created them just as they are. When I open my Bible to the very first words, I read in Genesis chapter 1, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And I come down to verse 27, and I see that God created man. In his image, male and female, he created them. In Psalm 139 and verse 14, David looked at himself and said, I am fearfully, I am wonderfully made. In Jeremiah 1 and verse 5, God says to Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Who did the forming? Who did the knowing? God said, I did. I saw a t-shirt on a young man, and it said, God made me and he don't make no junk. Well, that's not very good English, but I tell you what, it's a real good truth. God made me and he don't make no junk. In Proverbs 22 and verse 6, when Solomon said, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. In the marginal reading of my text in the New American Standard Version, I have a literal rendering of that that says it could be translated, train up a child according to his way. Now, if that be the case, Solomon is not saying train up a child and let him have his way. That's not what he's saying. He's saying train up a child according to his way with the understanding that every child is unique, that every child is different, with an understanding of each child's natural inclinations, with each child's one-of-a-kind personalities. And thus, as a parent, I understand that every child is different, and so I adjust my parenting accordingly. The point is, kids don't come off an assembly line. Our children are not mass produced. We say there's no two snowflakes alike. Let me tell you something. There's no two kids alike. And how does that happen, God? Let me tell you how unique your kids are, how special your children are. When God got ready to make the world, as glorious as it is, as awesome as it is, when God got ready to create the world, He took 6 days. When God got ready to make your child, He took 9 months. That's how special your child is. Children are not alike. If you think about your children, you understand that your children are not alike. Even identical twins are not identical. They're not alike. If you think about your siblings when you were growing up at home and your brothers and sisters, I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say that you weren't alike, that you were different. I have one brother, and we're not alike at all. Listen, my brother is short. I'm tall. My brother is bald. I've still got some. My brother is smart. Go with that wherever you want to. I don't really care. When my brother would bring home a report card, it was the most boring thing because he would always bring home a report card and the parents would sit there, you know, mom and dad sit there, open it up. It's always the same thing. I don't know why they bothered. It was always A, 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 A. When I brought home a report card and they opened it up, listen, I had alphabetical variety. You could pick a letter and it's going to be there somewhere, some point, sometime. The point is, my brother and I aren't anything alike. Your brother and sisters aren't anything alike. Your kids aren't anything alike. In fact, there are no two kids alike. And I have a theory. I have a theory that the reason some kids rebel is because they grow up and they think that their parents never really have taken the time to know them. Our kids are going to suffer through enough defeats and disappointments in life. Those are inevitable. There's going to be times when others are going to doubt them. There will be times when they will doubt themselves. But there is one thing, ladies and gentlemen, that will get them through the hard times of life, and that is the knowledge that God knows them and God loves them. And where are they going to get that if they don't learn that at home? Our kids need to know that they are a special creation of God. Second, our kids need to know that they are loved unconditionally. One of the great tragedies of our times is that there are so many kids who feel unloved. They grow up in a daycare world. They're babysat by the television or they're babysat by some electronic device. And many of them are left to make it on their own, and they don't make it very well. And I'll tell you, our children deserve the gift of parents who will make each one of them feel valued and feel important and feel loved. And we can show them that in so many ways. But the easiest way is to tell them again and again and again. If they hit a home run with the bases loaded and win the game, great. But if they strike out and their team loses, it doesn't matter because they're going to come home to a house of unconditional love. If they win the school election or come in dead last, doesn't matter. They're going to come home to a house of unconditional love. If they make all A's and B's, or if they're less than stellar academic performance, doesn't matter. They're going to come home to a house of unconditional love. You can talk about a truth that will stay with them for the rest of their lives. You talk about a gift they will treasure as they grow older. That's it. They are loved unconditionally. Third, we need to be teaching our children that the important things in life cannot be bought. And that's a very hard lesson for some of us. Because I tell you what we've done in America, we've turned the good life into the goods life. And materialism has just taken over. In today's world, it's not any good if you don't have the latest and the biggest and the best. And don't you think our kids see that? Don't you think our kids notice that? That we as a culture have bought into the lie that the one who dies with the most toys wins. But nobody ever stops to define what they win. Job said in Job 1 and verse 21, "Naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return." Our kids need to learn a hard lesson. But we as parents need to learn a hard lesson. So if you're a parent tonight of kids still at home, I want you to write something down on that little piece of paper you're taking notes on. Because I want you to write these words down and I want you to see them for yourself. And here are the words. My kids don't have to have everything. My kids don't have to have everything. And if the truth be known, our kids could do with less stuff and more us. Let me tell you how to raise lazy, selfish children. If you want to raise lazy and selfish, ungrateful, obnoxious kids, then I tell you what you do. You just give them whatever they want whenever they want it. And I know that some kids in this country struggle in poverty. I get that. But equally as desperate are the scores of kids who end up poor, who end up with broken lives, because somewhere along the line, they have been led to believe that the key to happiness is money, and the key to success is stuff. And Jesus said the opposite. In Luke 12 and verse 15, he says, "Not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of the things he possesses." What are we teaching our children about things? By the way, most kids involved in school shootings come from upper class neighborhoods. What's missing? Well, I'll tell you what's missing. Mom is at work, and Dad is checked out, and there's nobody at home minding the store. I was in Lexington, Kentucky, and I decided I was going to drive home on Friday night after the meeting was over, and I had to check out of the hotel at noon. And I've always heard people say you can go into a Barnes & Noble and actually stay there all day. Well, I learned that, yeah, you can do that. So I checked out of the hotel and I went to Barnes & Noble. And I had all day to kill. And while I was there, I read two books, put both of them back on the shelf. That didn't really bother my conscience because I bought a Starbucks and a sandwich and paid about $15 for those things. And just stayed there and read and really had an enjoyable day. But one of the books I read was a book by Zell Miller, who was a Georgia congressman. And there was a quote in that book that I had to write down. And this is what he said. "Today's parents give in too easily to the pressures exerted by their kids. Loving and well-meaning parents are so intent on giving their children what they didn't have when they were growing up, that they failed to give them what they did have. A sense of place, a sense of family, a sense of conduct, and a sense of values. So today, both parents work so that 16-year-old Junior can have a nice car to drive to school, just like all of the other kids whose parents all do the same thing." And I tell you, if you want to conduct a little experiment across our nation, do this experiment. Go to an American high school and look at the kind of cars the kids drive versus the kind of cars the teachers drive. And tell me who has the nicer cars. One of our guys at church has his own insurance business. He told me the other day of a dad who came in and needed to write a new policy on his son who's 17 because his son who is 17 had totaled his car. but it was the third car the kid had totaled in a year. And the new insurance policy that was going to be written was going to cost him $10,000 to write for that kid. And my friend said to him, he said, I looked at that dad. And I said, did it ever dawn on you that maybe what you as a father ought to do is buy him a bicycle? And he said, that dad stood there and looked down at his feet and said these words, you know, I wish I had the guts to do that. That's what I'm talking about. We have got to instill better values in the lives of our kids, and this is one of them, that the important things in life cannot be bought. I remember one time we had an ice storm, and the electricity went out, and we had a wood fireplace, and so we had that thing going, and we had the card table set up, and we had the candles going, and we were playing some kind of old-fashioned card game or board game, and we were playing that for about 45 minutes. And we were having so much fun, and then all of a sudden the lights came back on, the electricity came back on. And our son Dale jumped up about that time and went over and turned them off as fast as he could. And I thought, you know, there's a message there. There's a strong message there of what's really important, and that maybe sometimes we forget. The important things in life cannot be bought. Number four. Choices have consequences. Our kids grow up and hear a lot about choices, but very little about consequences. And it can be simple things, like a child who watches television or plays on the computer or spends her time or his time texting all of the time when they need to be studying for a test. They're going to suffer the consequences when it comes to grade time. But it's much more serious than that. A teenager who decides to become sexually active, there's consequences. A young person who begins to experiment with alcohol or drugs, there's consequences. Now, much of modern education focuses on helping our kids explore all of their choices instead of helping them to make the right ones. But I got to tell you something. Really, that's my job as a parent, and that's your job as a parent. Numbers 32 and verse 23, to help our kids understand that your sins will find you out. That choices, yeah, there's a lot of choices in life. But those choices come with consequences. They have to know that. Number five, our kids need to know that there is such a thing as right and wrong. Society may preach moral relativism and toleration. I'm okay, you're okay, everybody's okay, do whatever you want to do and don't condemn anybody else. But I will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, there is right and wrong. And they may not hear that from the classroom, and they're not going to hear it from the media, and they're not going to hear it from social media. So where are they going to hear it if they don't hear it at home? I love what somebody said about Moses. He said what Moses brought down from the mountain wasn't the 10 suggestions, but commandments. In Ephesians 6:1, he says, children, obey your parents of the Lord, for this is right. 1 Peter 3 and verse 17, it is better to suffer for what is right than to suffer for what is wrong. Some things are right, some things are wrong. And our kids have got to get back to the basics of the one and only moral compass that will guide them through the maze of all of their decision making. And that's this book. Because there is a right and there is a wrong. Number six, write this down. Courage is a must. One of the gifts that we can give our children is the courage to stand up for what is right, even if they have to stand alone. Because peer pressure is an awesome force. And our kids get countless messages telling them what to wear, what to listen to, and where to go. And some of that can be very innocent. But some of that isn't. I wish I had a dollar for every time I heard one of my children say, but Dad, everybody's doing this. Everybody's wearing this. Everybody's seeing this. Everybody's buying this. First of all, I never could find out who everybody was. But anyway, that has to be met with a very firm, listen, We are not everybody's parents. We are your parents. You are not everybody's son. You are not everybody's daughter. You are our son and our daughter. And parent, you have a God-given right. You have a God-given duty to be the parent. And to teach your kids and to show them by example the courage that they need to have to stand, even if they have to stand alone. That's why we teach the lessons of Joseph and Daniel and Esther and Joshua. Don't we sing, "Dare to Stand Like Joshua"? That's the messages we have to send our children. That they need the courage to stand, even if they have to stand alone. Number seven, we need to teach our children that human life is sacred. That human life is sacred. I saw a car with two bumper stickers. And the bumper sticker on the left said, "I brake for animals." The bumper sticker on the right said, "Pro-choice." And I looked at that and I thought, that's where we are as a nation. That's what we have become. And we have forgotten that human life is a gift, a holy gift from a holy God. And isn't that one of the things that Jesus tried to tell us when he came? When he hung around all the wrong people, like the Samaritan woman, or the Bethesda beggar, or Zacchaeus, or the children, "Send the children away, they're bothering us." Or the thief on the cross. What is it Jesus was trying to communicate to us? Well, I'll tell you what it was. It is that every single life has value. Every life has worth. Several years ago, a young lady came to me, and she was struggling, and her marriage was struggling. And she was expecting a child, and she came to me to inform me that she was going to have an abortion. And she gave me all of the reasons why that made sense to her. She wasn't sure if her marriage was going to make it, and it wasn't fair to bring a child into this relation or into the world where she wouldn't have but one parent, and the world was a bad place anyway, and it'd just be so hard for this child. And she just went on and on, and I listened and I didn't say anything. And finally, when she finished, the only thing I could think to say was this: you know, when God gives you a gift, when God gives you a gift, you don't wad it up and throw it away. Because if God gives you a gift, there must be a reason for it. You need to value the gift. Several years went by, and I was in a meeting. And this woman came up to me with a beautiful teenage daughter. And she said, "I want you to meet my daughter." And I must tell you, it was hard not to just break down and cry. Because the little girl that she introduced me to was the little girl that she decided not to abort. She kept the gift. And she and her husband, by the way, reconciled. And they're still together and doing well. When God gives you a gift, you value the gift. Number eight, write this down. Hard work is worth it. In the third chapter of Colossians, in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 22, he says, "Slaves, in all things, obey those who are your masters on earth, not with external service as those who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord." They had the slave-master economy in the Roman Empire. We don't have that. But we have the employer-employee economy. It's the same principle. He says in verse 23, whatever you do, do your work heartily as for the Lord rather than for men. He says, if you're going to be a Christian, he says, have integrity on the job. Do your best. If you're going to draw a paycheck, earn it. I tell young people all of the time, listen, there's three things you got to do. When you go out and get your first job, there's three things you got to do. Number one is you show up each day on time. And on time means you're there early. And secondly, it means you make a commitment to quality. And third, it means you do more than what is expected. It used to drive me crazy in the house with our four. I'd be walking along, or I'd see one of the kids walking through, and there'd be a piece of paper, maybe wadded up over there on the floor, and I'd say, hey, pick that up. And they'd say, I didn't drop that. I don't care if you didn't drop it or not. You're walking by, you're part of the family, pick it up. But sometimes that's the mindset of people. That's not my job. Have integrity, do your best. Know who you're working for, verse 24. Knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance, it is the Lord Christ whom you serve. I've had people say to me, I wouldn't want to be a preacher because I wouldn't want God as my boss. Well, guess what? Guess who is your boss, just like he's my boss. We need to be teaching our children that work is an honorable thing and that God has zero sympathy for the lazy. Hard work is worth it. Number nine, we need to be teaching our kids that marriage is for life. There was a sign in the Los Angeles jewelry store that said, quote, we rent wedding rings. There's commitment, isn't it? God intends for marriage to be permanent. Romans chapter 7 and verse 2, one man, one woman for life. Now there's an exception to that, sexual immorality in Matthew 19 and verse 9. But I will tell you, as I read my Bible, I can only find three people that have a right to be married. Somebody who's never married. Somebody whose spouse has died. Somebody who's put their spouse away for fornication. I can't find anybody else. And somebody says, well, that sounds very strict. It is. That's why we need to be teaching our children on the front end to make a good decision. At number 10, we need to be teaching our kids that God comes first. The conclusion, when all has been heard, is this: fear God and keep His commandments, for God will bring everything to judgment, everything hidden, whether it is good or evil. And He says in the very first verse, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. God comes first. I'll close in Proverbs chapter 24 and verse 3 and 4. If you'll take your Bible there and just read a couple of verses with me as we end our thoughts. Proverbs 24 and verse 3 and 4. Probably my two favorite verses about the family, about the home. Proverbs 24, verse 3, verse 4. By wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established, and by knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant riches. You know the kind of riches Solomon is talking about that should fill your home? Not the kind of stuff you can go out and buy. It's the kind of things we've been talking about tonight. You know, I turn on the news and I see the devastation in Southeast Texas. And your heart just goes out for these people whose homes are flooded and they have to leave and escape. And then have to deal with the aftermath of coming back and cleaning out and throwing away and all of that. Last fall in East Tennessee, the fires around the Smoky Mountain area just devastated so many homes. My wife and I were back there the other day, and you drive around certain neighborhoods, and all that's there is a slab, a concrete slab. And you see those news stories also with the families that go back, and they're just digging through ashes. There's nothing left. But I want to tell you something. What Solomon is talking about in Proverbs 24 are the things that a flood cannot destroy. They're the things that a fire cannot destroy. A flood and a fire cannot destroy commitment. And a flood and a fire cannot destroy love. And a flood and a fire cannot destroy relationships. And a flood and a fire can't destroy memories. Those are the riches with which we are to fill our homes. And may God help us to do that. And may God help us to give gifts to our children that as they grow up and have children, that they will pass on to their families. We sing the song of invitation tonight. If you're not a Christian, why don't you obey the gospel and give your life to Christ? You can be buried in baptism tonight for the remission of your sins. And guess what? You become part of the family of God. If we can help you in any way tonight, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.